It's the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson.
Now, while this is all going on, I went through President Trump's speech and Chuck and Nancy's rebuttal.
The most important story.
The American people finally said enough, and that is why they elected Donald Trump.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Britain's version of Medicare for All is struggling with long waits for care.
And opinions and ideas that prepare you to tackle the day ahead.
Because ideas matter.
It's the AmeriChicks, dissecting issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. Agree or disagree, let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation. Welcome to the AmeriChicks. It's important to be having conversations about all kinds of things out there, and so that's what we do every Monday through Friday. Thrilled to have in studio with me my friend, and that is Rick Turnquest. Rick, it's great to have you here.
Good morning, Kim. Thanks. It's great to be here.
And you are in the energy industry by day?
Yes, by day I work in the energy industry, despoiling the earth, and by night I'm a blogger and activist, and I work hard to advance the cause of freedom and liberty in the state of Colorado and nationally.
And you also are attending Vino and Veritas. You're one of the Vino and Veritas members.
That's right. I'm a charter member of the first Vino and Veritas. It's been a great experience so far, and I highly encourage anyone who wants to learn more about our founding documents from a brilliant speaker to attend.
And today we're going to talk about 1984, which is George Orwell's book. There seems to be some parallels these days.
There really is. It's amazing to me how the left in this country has weaponized the English language to advance their causes. And I feel like in rereading George Orwell's book 1984 recently, I found several parallels between what we're hearing out of the left and Colorado Democrats today and what Orwell wrote about in 1984.
And so we need to make sure that we know what's going on so that we can talk with our friends and our family, our neighbors, our colleagues, because we are in a great battle of ideas right now, Rick.
And this is true. And the fact of the matter is that words mean things, and they mean the things that they're commonly accepted to mean. And when a certain political party, abuses language to connote that words don't mean the things that most people think they mean or that they're accepted to mean, then that's just another way of fighting their battle, and they fight it on every front.
And they do. And you know, I think that we have really acquiesced. We're going to talk more about that really in segments 3 and 4. But language is so important, and communication is so important. And Rick, a new thing that we are doing here in the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson is we are starting to curate some authors. We're going to have some cool name. I can't figure out what, Zach and I are working on that. But Jane Chaney had written a couple of pieces regarding the national popular vote. And it was just astonishing, the results, the shares on that. I think there were over 400 shares between the two articles. So you can go to my website and find those. So today we are rolling out a very fine piece that you did. And that was let's see, it's Colorado Democrats 1984 and Newspeak, right?
Yes, that's the title. And I wrote that piece specifically in preparation for our radio show this morning. I wanted to have some talking points out there for people to read as they were listening to the show or afterwards, so that they could understand kind of some of the concepts we brought forth and hopefully we're going to talk about today.
Okay, so that's on AmeriChicks Facebook. Be sure and like that page as well. And it's also on my website, AmeriChicks.com. And sign up for our emails so that we can keep you apprised of all the upcoming guests and events. So we need to remember, and I remind you every morning, that socialism is not social. Actually, Nazi stood for the National Socialist German Workers' Party. And typically, everyday people don't do very well under socialism, and it's been romanticized in our education system. And so we need to be walking that back. The kids are home from school this summer, and so we need to be having conversations. So socialism is force. The big question whenever you look at an issue is freedom versus force, force versus freedom. It is never compassionate to take other people's rights, property, or freedom via force, whether with a weapon, policy, or unpredictable and overtaxation. And a frequent guest on the AmeriChicks, Stephen Kessler, millennial PhD, has us ask three questions when we're talking with people. First of all, do you have any skin in the game? If you don't have any skin in the game, then probably there's not a conversation to be had. Secondly, are we bringing people up or are we yanking them down? And lastly, you felt good, but did you do good? And we are seeing a socialization in transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. That's where the administrative state is taking control of these things. In doing so, they are doing what they think is best instead of what is best for the everyday people. So continue to think about that. Today, always thank you to producer Steve. He's off today, and we have Dave running the boards. Dave, it is great to have you here. And he's putting his ears on.
It's great to be here, man. It's early, though.
It is an early show.
I love it.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Thank you for running the boards. And to Zach, Patty, and Keith for the great team. And to you, my listeners, thank you. And each of you, you're valued, you're treasured. And thank you for listening. And certainly let other people know about the AmeriChicks as well. Speaking of chicks, Lynn Spence, who is the organizer of our Tapas and Topics women's groups. And on that note, if you are interested in our Tapas and Topics women's groups, just email me at AmeriChicks.com/Kim. But Lynn is the one that has spearheaded the one out in Southwest Jefferson County. And she is so creative. Tomorrow morning, she has decided she's going to set up shop in front of a new coffee shop, Ground Up Coffee Cafe, at 5035 South Kipling Parkway. She's going to be there from 9 to 11, and you can drop by and you can sign the petition to get that national popular vote question on the ballot. And they're doing really well, but they need 125,000, I think, good signatures. So they're trying to get 200,000. So you know, you may be pulling your hair out when you look at what's going on. You say, oh my gosh, what can I do? Just put your John Hancock on that little petition, and that would be a good thing.
And that really illustrates a point about people in general need to be more aware of what's going on in their state legislature. You know, I recently, as this bill was being discussed before it was passed, I told my sister about it. She's like, "You're kidding! They're taking away our votes in the presidential elections." And I said, "Yeah, and that's, you know, you need to be aware of what's going on." And a lot of people just ignore what happens under the Gold Dome, but it actually, you know, real life consequences stem from decisions made in that building.
And to that point, Rick, because you mentioned you're a charter member of the Vino and Veritas, the very first one, and these were essays. What is it, 85 of them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's 85 essays that Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, and James Madison, they wrote this under the name Publius, and they were making the case for ratification for the U.S. Constitution. And I think the elites of today look back at the everyday people back, the patriots, during the Revolutionary War, and they think that they're just farmers and merchants or whatever. The Federalist Papers were essays that everybody was reading in newspapers. And so for us to have our head in the sand on what's going on down at the legislature, I want to make another point, though. I think that the part of the Orwellian mantra is to make things so complicated that there's so much out there that people finally kind of throw up their hands and they go, I can't get it. So that's why we do this show. That's why you blog. That's why you write.
That's right. And sometimes, you know, you need to really do deep dives into issues to try to understand them more fully. Mm-hmm. And read bills. You know, when the legislature has a great website, I don't like a lot of the content, but it lists every single bill that's up before the legislature during the session. And people should actually read those bills to understand what's being discussed and be prepared to go down and testify if they get a chance to, mm-hmm. At a normal hour instead of midnight.
Yeah. And it is, I used to think that was above my pay grade, but that is something that I started to do. For the AmeriChicks, we've done voters' guides the last couple of election seasons and go through those. And then, you know, you and I are both steeped in these principles, these ideas of freedom versus force versus freedom. And so you need to look at these things. And then we need to, as you mentioned, go down to the legislature. However, I don't think they listened this year. But we need to be aware of that, and we need to find good candidates that we can vote for and get these people out that are walking all over our freedoms.
That's exactly right. It's really incumbent upon us to, as conservative and libertarian people, to really evaluate who the best candidates are for office and support the one who's going to be for limited government and freedom. You know, one of my favorite former legislators was Justin Everett, who was rightly proud of his many no votes over his years in the legislature.
Because he was saying no to bigger government.
Yes, exactly right. He was saying no to much of the radical progressive agenda that's being advanced in Colorado over the last several years.
Mm-hmm. So that's we need to look for candidates, and people need to step up as well. They need to step up and run for office. The left, the left of today, you know, the Democrats of today are not the Democrats of JFK.
That's
not
true.
Even close.
JFK would be laughed out of today's Democratic Party.
Right. And so they have taken over the Democrat Party here in Colorado. And that's why we need to be vigilant. And we need to be vigilant at the local level, school boards, across the spectrum. So we're going to, it's going to, Rick, the show is going to go way too fast. But I need to get into, first of all our inspiration. And I was thinking about 1984 and was trying to think of different quotes. So this is from John Paul Jones and his response to by the enemy to demand his surrender in 1779. And he says, "I have not yet begun to fight." You like that one?
I like it.
Okay. And today's funnies. Dave, are you ready for this one? I took a joke and then I kind of changed it a little bit.
I've been waiting all week for this.
Are you? Okay, here we go. Soon after a Boulder activist showed up at the nonprofit that he volunteered with, his community coordinator called him over and told him that he had a phone call in the front office. When the Boulder activist returned, he had a mournful expression on his face and his head hung low. His community coordinator noticed and asked if he had received bad news. "I did," he replied. "I just found out that my mother died earlier this morning." "Oh, that's awful," replied the community coordinator. "Do you want the rest of the day off?" "No," replied the Boulder activist. "I'll finish the day out." About an hour later, the community coordinator returned to inform them that there was another phone call for him. This time, when the Boulder activist returned, he looked twice as glum, and the community coordinator asked him if everything was all right. He said, "This is the worst day of my life," moaned the Boulder activist. "That was my brother, and his mother died today, too." Ha ha. And I was looking for brother jokes because of Big Brother, and that's why I came up with that one, Rick, in honor of you. So, okay, we're going to go through some headlines. I think we'll go ahead and go to break and then do some headlines after that. In segments 3 and 4, we'll be talking about George Orwell's 1984. But before we do that, the Rocks swept the Diamondbacks. Is that not awesome? And they are on the road. They're going to be playing the Dodgers, and then they head to San Francisco. And Hooters Restaurants is my sports headquarters. It's the place to be this summer. You can enjoy Hooters' beach-worthy seafood items like amazing fish tacos, delicious snow crab legs, and mouth-watering buffalo shrimp. That stuff is really good, Rick. The girls love them. I got it the last time the girls came over. So Hooters has plenty of ice-cold beer options to help cool you down this summer. Now, if you dine in, they have this great special, 9 items for $9, 11 to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. And you have great menu items like fish and shrimp tacos, salads, cheeseburger, Philly cheese steak, and, of course, those great boneless wings. So you can dine in for those. You can get food to go, or you can have some of these great menu items delivered to your front door. So for more information, go to HootersColorado.com. That's HootersColorado.com. And let them know that you know the Americhicks. We're going to go to break. We'll be back. Rick Turnquest, my guest AmeriDude, is in studio. We'll be talking about some headlines. Segment 2, segments 3 and 4, George Orwell's 1984. We'll be right back.
All Americhick sponsors are an exclusive partnership with the Americhicks and are not affiliated or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the AmeriChicks with Kim Munson and grow your business, contact Kim at AmeriChicks.com. That's AmeriChicks.com.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson with the AmeriChicks at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. And now introducing Vino and Veritas in Fort Collins at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson with the AmeriChicks would like to thank Otto Fireguard for sponsoring this fascinating exploration of the U.S. Constitution and sponsoring the new Vino and Veritas in Fort Collins. Kim Munson looks forward to celebrating U.S. Constitution Week in Grand Lake. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today at AmeriChicks.com.
It's summertime, 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 summertime.
I guess it is summertime today, isn't it, Rick Turnquest?
Yes, it is. In fact, today is the summer solstice, and our forecasted high tomorrow is 65 degrees. So,
how's that global warming working out for you?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, no wonder they pivoted to climate change, and you can't see my air quotes. But, yeah, when your theories don't pan out, just move
the
ball close. Yep.
And that is very Orwellian, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. That's a great. Okay. We'll jump in here. This is the AmeriChicks with Kim Munson, where we dissect issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left, agree or disagree. Let's have a conversation. So we're going to go through some headlines. This very first one, I want to talk about this. As many of you know, transportation, when I was on city council, I really saw kind of, you might say, Orwellian tendencies to really control people's movement, their mobility. And the ability for people to move about is inherent in freedom. And so for people to be able to choose how they travel is so important. But the planners really think that everyday people should be living their lives on trains and buses and bicycles. But of course they don't. And they even have special parking spots downtown where they can, when they go downtown. But Joshua Scharf has written a very important piece in Complete Colorado. And it really takes the veil off of what's going on over RTD. His title is RTD Data Shows Declining Ridership and Rising Costs for Transit. Now, Rick Turnquist, you know, that's kind of what happens is you get the administrative state going and the costs go up and they want to continue to push a product that people are saying with their dollars they don't want to use.
Yeah, that's right. And the fact of the matter is, you know, RTD is a government entity. They take money by government force and they provide a product that, you know, while a lot of people do use public transportation, a lot more don't. And, you know, there's problems with reliability sometimes. There's problems with overcrowded trains or, you know, insufficient, you know, service on the more crowded routes. Well, you know, like I ride the light rail downtown and every day I see the R train pull into the station and it's practically empty. You know, two or three, six people get on. Mm-hmm. And then the next train is, it's the E line or the F line. And, you know, it's got three cars when it should have four. And, you know, sometimes it's crowded, sometimes it's not. But, you know, the fact of the matter is when I have a day where I need to have some flexibility, I drive my car to work instead of taking the train.
Well, and another thing is that fare is significantly subsidized by everybody else. And so I submit to you, if people had to really pay that full fare, so I don't know what it is, but typically, because I don't write it, but it's what probably, anyway, your fare typically only covers 20% of the operating costs. That doesn't cover any of the construction. So let's take a look at Joshua Scharf's article here, though. He says, another year, some more ridership numbers and more evidence that the Metro Denver area's public transportation continues to deliver less value for more money. The 8-County Regional Transportation District, RTD, continues to report declining ridership and increasing operating costs. According to the Facts and Figures page on RTD's website, total ridership fell for the fourth straight year in 2018 to 97.6 million. Now, I want to mention, when they typically talk about ridership, they are only talking about one way. So if you're talking about somebody taking a light rail to work and back, that's really one person. But they inflate the numbers, I think, because they count them at rider. But it's really one person that's doing a round trip. So it's really half that. And this is down from 100.9 million total boardings in 2017. It's off 7% from 2014's high, and it is only slightly higher than 2010's ridership of 97.2 million. Additionally, Denver area residents are paying more and more for fewer and fewer rides. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. Not only does RTD have the highest one-way fares in any major city in the country, the system's operating budget has ballooned by 46% since 2014 and 81% since 2010. As a result, the operating cost per ride is up nearly 60% in 4 years. The decline comes even as the Denver, Aurora, Lakewood's area population has risen dramatically, up an estimated 6% since 2014 and nearly 15% since 2010. So we have a lot more people, but ridership is down. So, this is what Patty said. So even as more and more people move to the Denver area, fewer and fewer are choosing to commute via public transportation. Now, this is the last thing. Understand that these numbers include the free 16th Street Mall shuttle, where the vast majority of boardings don't really qualify as transit. Rick Turnquist, what do you think about that?
Well, a couple thoughts come to mind right off the bat. First of all, government entities have no incentives to control costs, so it's no surprise that these budgets have grown so dramatically. And in fact, you know, the big debate right now we have is Tabor and the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, which limits the growth of government, mm-hmm. and requires them to ask us for tax increases or new taxes, which they are trying to evade by calling things premiums, but
fees
and fees. Mm-hmm. But our state budget has grown dramatically, far faster than the population growth, just in spite of Tabor. So when people talk about Proposition CC or whatever it is that's going to be mm-hmm. on the ballot that where the government's asking to keep
keeping your tax refunds forever.
The correct vote for that is no, because our government grows by a substantial amount every year in spite of Tabor.
Right, and there is going to I think there's going to be assault on Tabor, an all-out assault on Tabor, because the Colorado Supreme Court just ruled within the last week or so that there can be a Tabor question. And what you mentioned is so important that people understand that Tabor, which is Colorado's taxpayers' Bill of Rights, it is an amendment in the Constitution.
That's right.
Where the people of Colorado basically said, hey government, hey bureaucrats, politicians, and interested parties, there's three things. If you want to raise our taxes, if you want to incur debt that we're going to have to pay off, or if you want to keep our excess tax revenues above a very it's population plus inflation. So it's a good growth number. If you want to keep anything above that, you just have to ask us. You know what? Just ask us. It's just good manners. And so there's going to be some questions on the ballot that's going to say, we don't want to have good manners. We don't want to have to ask you.
Well, the left really hates Tabor because it does.
And some on the right, too.
Well, yeah. And the fact of the matter is, some people who call themselves on the right, they want to grow government, too, for their own pet projects. But, the fact of the matter is government is limited government is the appropriate form of government for the United States. That's what was laid out in our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution. And limiting the growth of government is good for everybody. And as long as the economy grows faster than the government does, we're going to be in good shape. But when government grows faster than the economy does, we see things like what's happening in Venezuela today.
Bingo. You got it. Let's see. Let's move on to another headline here. This was really interesting. And I want to talk with you a little bit about this. The Supreme Court says that the Peace Cross can stand. It's a 94-year-old Latin cross honoring 49 men who died in World War I, and they ruled that it can remain standing on public land in Maryland. The court said Thursday. The court ruled 7-2 that the cross does not violate the Establishment Clause of the Constitution. Justices Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor dissented. Justice Samuel Alito wrote for the majority. He says the religion clauses of the Constitution aim to foster a society in which people of all beliefs can live together harmoniously, and the presence of the Bladensburg cross on the land where it has stood for so many years is fully consistent with that aim. Ginsburg, however, wrote in her dissent that the Latin cross symbolizes the foundational tenets of Christianity and argued that by keeping the Peace Cross on public land, the state places Christianity above other faiths and conveys a message of exclusion to non-Christians. Now, the Establishment Clause. I got to get this here for you. This is in the First Amendment of the Constitution, and it says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, a prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Okay, I love the fact that this ruling was made like this, and the fact that, yes, that we should be able to live harmoniously. Now, Rick, this has been a question, and I actually asked Supreme Court Justice Scalia was in town before his death, and I actually asked him this question. And the founder said there should be no establishment of religion, which I submit to you is a belief system.
Yes.
Okay. Now, some people have said that they meant it to be metaphysical. I don't think so. I don't think so much. And so we have this whole almost religion of LGBTQ in America right now. And we are seeing that particular religion being pushed into public schools. We're seeing government dollars used for that. And I think that goes against the Establishment Clause in the U.S. Constitution. What do you think?
Well, I would agree that the left has elevated certain aspects and certain people to the point where it is quasi-religious. And you see it with climate change, which is, you know, the rabid climate change belief, despite evidence to the contrary is, you know, certainly has aspects of a religion. So does, you know, I'm all in favor of people living their lives in accordance with how they want.
And, I totally agree.
And, you know,
it's not my business.
Right. And, you know, I have gay family members. I have no problem with gay people whatsoever.
Too.
And the problem I have is when they demand that other people celebrate and embrace their lifestyle. And that goes against the Establishment Clause. The Establishment Clause says, let's all live together in harmony, live and let live. And that's my philosophy. You can do whatever you want in the privacy of your home if you're a consenting adult, but as long as it doesn't infringe on others. But at the same time, don't demand that I embrace
your choices.
And, yes, exactly. And, you know,
the other thing, what has happened is that government, like the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, and said to Jack Phillips, if you don't affirm this, we're going to use the power of government to shut your business down. So that's very Orwellian as well.
Oh, very much so. And the fact of the matter is, you know, Master P Cake Shop is a private business. It's his private property. He's using his intellectual property to create those and design those cakes. And he should be able to do business with whoever he wants. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, in a free society, he would be free to choose, you know, free to be able to decline any kind of business he wanted to. And other people who wanted to have their gay wedding cakes
exactly.
or whatever could
the
go
free market
to
could take care
somebody
of it.
Who would be wanting to a gay baker who wants to provide
exactly.
gay wedding cakes for those people. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's how free markets and free society works.
Free markets can make that work. And speaking of free markets, we have Jason McBride on the line with us. Jason McBride, how are you doing? I know you love free markets.
I love free markets, yes. I think they're the solution to nearly everything.
I do, too. And, hey, Jason, we're going to be talking about 1984. Do you remember where you were in 19... Were you born in 1984, Jason?
Well, you've seen the color of my hair on my head, what's left, and on my face. Yeah, in 1984, I was a sophomore in high school.
Okay, well, we're going to be talking about 1984 in segments 3 and 4. But before we do that, the market. Tell us what's going on.
Well, I got two things to kind of bring up today. Yeah, the market, exciting day yesterday. The S&P 500 closed at by 0.05 points at an all-time new high. You know, a lot of that was fueled by oil prices going up and oil stocks going up. But then a lot of it was also fueled by the market for some reason thinking that we've got some interest rates cuts coming up against what Jerome Powell said. So the market and the Treasury, the head of the Treasury are having a disagreement, or the head of the Federal Reserve, sorry. And, you know, that is a little bit concerning, Kim, because if the market's getting spoiled and it thinks it's got interest rate cuts coming and they don't come, then, you know, we could get some volatility to the downside.
Right.
But
sure.
I think yesterday a lot of this was driven by oil prices, or at least part of it, because they have a pretty good weighting, especially in the Dow and the S&P.
Okay, got it. And you said there was one other thing on your mind this morning.
Yes, I think that there are several, you know, Republican House members and senators that need to keep their mouth shut. And I'm going to mention Lindsey Graham in particular. We talked about this the other day. He needs to just shut up. And, you know, there's kind of this attitude with some of these Republicans, Kim, and you know what I'm talking about, that, well, President, you know, Donald Trump is the president, but of course I'm much smarter than he is, and he's so lucky that he has me to listen to and go out and say what he should do. Well, yesterday the market was doing just fine until Lindsey started shooting off his big mouth about how we need to take action against Iran and this and that. And as soon as Trump came on and kind of calmed everybody down, the market started going back up again. So I'm asking the question, who is it that doesn't have the temperament to be president?
Aha. I can tell that this this really hit a nerve with you, Jason.
And, it did. And, it did.
And it was interesting that President Trump came out and said that he thinks that the shooting down of this drone probably was a mistake. And, you know, he could have thrown fuel on the fire, and it looks like he's trying to give everybody, you know, calmer heads here. He does not sound like a guy that is so trigger happy like everybody has tried to portray him as. So, I think I get your point big time, Jason. So
yeah, so you know what? I'm perfectly comfortable with Donald J. Trump having his fingers around the nuclear codes, because I don't think he's just itching to launch.
I don't think he is either. So, Jason, you know, before you came on, Rick Turnquist said, I love listening to Jason. And, you know, the thing about it is he doesn't sugarcoat it. You know, he's shooting straight with you, right, Rick?
That's right.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well,
so
thank you, Rick. That's very nice of you.
Okay. Hey, yeah, Jason, thanks so much. We will talk to you on Monday.
Okay. Have a good show, Kim.
Okay. Thank you so much. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, Rick Turnquist is in studio with me, and we're going to talk about George Orwell's 1984 and this great piece that's on my website. Zach's pushing it out this morning on Facebook, and that is the piece that you just did, and it is the Colorado Democrats, 1984, and Newspeak. We'll be right back.
Dan Predovich and his team at Predovich & Company help your business plan ahead financially. The AmeriChicks with Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company as your financial business consultant. Predovich & Company will take care of your tax preparation, bookkeeping, and business advisory services. Dan Predovich and his team want to learn the unique needs of your business through real, honest dialogue. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call 303-791-3000 to start preparing now for next year's tax season. Organize your business finances with Predovich & Company. Call 303-791-3000 today.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For over 30 years, entrepreneur, stylist, and AmeriChick Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game and freshen your look, email Kim at AmeriChicks.com for your initial style consult. Kim at AmeriChicks.com.
Social media is important to the AmeriChicks, since it's an avenue we can utilize to hear from and speak to all of our friends. For those of you who enjoy listening to the show, we'd love to hear what's on your radar. Follow us and talk to us at AmeriChicks Twitter and Facebook pages. Also, if you're a business owner who could benefit from some extra foot traffic from like-minded friends, consider advertising on the AmeriChicks radio show. Contact us at AmeriChicks.com or email Kim at AmeriChicks.com.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on AmeriChicks.com.
There's a slumber place.
Talk about how they use language.
Welcome back to the AmeriChicks, where we dissect issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. Agree or disagree, let's have a conversation. Producer Dave, I love it. Charlie put together all these summer songs since it's the first day of summer. That's so clever. I love it when that happens. So, okay, let's get into it. We have Rick Turnquist in studio, my guest, AmeriDude. We are talking about this piece. It just went up, and my gosh, it's already starting to get all kinds of traction here on Facebook. And that is this piece that you've done for us. It's the Colorado Democrats, 1984, and Newspeak. Where do you want to start? Maybe Newspeak, how language is just another weapon that's being used in the whole arsenal of progressivism.
Right. So kind of the origin of the term Newspeak is it's a term that was coined in the book, in the novel 1984, which was written by Englishman George Orwell and published in 1949. And basically, 1984 is a dystopian vision of the future of the United Kingdom. And in the novel, the United Kingdom is part of a larger entity known as Oceania, which consisted of the American continents, the British Isles, the southern half of Africa, and Australia. And the story follows this journey of Winston Smith. And I'm not going to go into great detail here because I want to encourage people to read the book. It's not a very long read. You can get through it in a few hours, and it's quite entertaining and illustrative of you know, some of the core concepts behind the mind control that the left wants to employ to advance their agenda. And the story follows the journey of Winston Smith, who's an outer party member who works in the Ministry of Truth. And basically his job is to sit in the Ministry of Truth all day and change newspaper articles and other documents to reflect the history that the party wants to have out there.
It seems like it's happening now with Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, all monitoring hate speech.
Yeah, that's right. Any speech they don't like or that they disagree with, which is mostly conservatives, is labeled as hate speech, even though it's nothing of the sort. And they're, you know, real active measures to demonetize and to deplatform conservative speakers on these social media platforms. So it's just a modern version of what Winston did in the novel. And he begins to resist the thought control of the English Socialist Party and engages in an affair with a younger woman named Julia. And Winston and Julia end up making contact with an inner party member, like an elite member of the party named O'Brien, whom they believe to be a member of an imagined resistance. And after being provided with a copy of the book, Manifesto about the Principles of English Socialism, and this is where the novel gets a little bit difficult trudging, because you got to read through, you know, this long chapter that's all, you know, basically the principles of English socialism as imagined by George Orwell. They have a rented room above an antique shop where they can get away from the constant monitoring by the telescreens. So in the book, every member of the party has a two-way television in their home by which the thought police can monitor their thoughts and actions.
Okay, I know this is a doo-doo-doo-doo question, but, you know, like the Alexa and the, you know, all those.
Yes.
I mean, in a way, it's almost like Orwellian.
Yes, it is. In fact, you know, these devices are always listening to us. And,
even when they're off?
From what I've heard, you know, if I pick up my iPhone and I say, "Hey Siri," and my phone just woke up, it's listening to you so that it can respond to your voice commands.
Okay, just a quick comment on this. There are it's neat. All this technology is neat, right? And in many ways, it makes our lives. I mean, we can connect with people but yet things that are neat can also be nefarious.
This is true, and it's just like with. I hate to say this, but it's just like with firearms, you know, they're tools. It's not the intrinsic object itself that's good or evil. It's what people make. It's how people use it that makes it for good or evil. And the truth is, you know, the government can and does, you know, through cameras and other technologies, you know, monitor people and monitor their movements. And it's very similar to, to what Orwell imagined in his book back in the 1940s.
So these things can be used for good, but they can be used for bad.
That's exactly true.
So continue on.
So anyway, Julia and Winston meet with O'Brien in O'Brien's home, and O'Brien apparently can turn off his telescreen since he's a member of the inner party, but it still records.
Of course.
Yeah, but it still records what's being said, as is found, Winston finds out to his regret later in the book. After months, you know, and there's a really poignant scene where Winston and Julia are finally arrested by the thought police. And after months of torture, brainwash, beatings, and, the final scary torture of Room 101, Winston and Julia are both broken and destroyed. And they're not murdered, as you would expect in, something like this. But they're released back into society. And they were destroyed as human beings. The last words of the book, speaking of Winston, he loved Big Brother. And Big Brother, of course, is the personification of the party, a figure modeled after Joseph Stalin.
And this Big Brother is everywhere.
Oh, yeah. In the book, yeah. And so coming out of this book was the concept of newspeak. And what newspeak was it was a language where it had a limited vocabulary and restricted grammar, and it was designed so that people would not be able to think in or express ideas that were counter to the tenets of the party. In other words, it was a form of thought control.
Mm-hmm.
By only, you know, instead of being able to freely express your thoughts, you were in Newspeak, you were limited to certain words and certain modifiers. And one of the characters in the book is a guy named Syme, who's working on, developing the language of Newspeak and writing dictionaries for Newspeak. Mm-hmm. And he ends up, because he knows so much about what Newspeak is all about and what it's designed to do, he has a conversation with Winston in the book, and then Winston says, I think Syme's going to be an unperson before long. And sure enough, later mm-hmm. in the book, Syme disappears, and in a very Stalin-esque move, and there's a famous picture of Stalin with somebody who was later disgraced, and the picture was retouched using the technology of the 40s or whatever, era mm-hmm. that was, to take that person out of the photo. And so that person became an unperson.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened to Syme in the book.
Okay. Rick, we're going to go to break here in just a minute, but let's just back up just a little bit. In the last segment, I had mentioned, we were talking about the Brandenburg Cross, the Supreme Court ruling regarding the fact that this Peace Cross can remain standing. It's been there, honoring people since World War I, people that gave their lives. And so the question was whether or not that this was establishing a certain religion. And I made the case, and I think I do want to clarify a bit, regarding religion. In the Establishment Clause, let's get right to it again, it says that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And at that point, I pulled in and said that religion, I believe, is a belief system. Now, I've had people push back and say that definition had to be metaphysical. I don't think so. I don't think that that's what the founders meant. So it is a belief system. And then I brought up the example of the LGBTQ agenda, where we're seeing that religion is being, government dollars are being used to teach that. We had House Bill 1032, which is now law here in Colorado, which says that you have to teach the sexual experiences of LGBTQ. Well, that seems to me like government is establishing a religion. So let's take that over there. But you also mentioned, and I too, I have very good friends, on an individual level. I have family members that are gay, and I care deeply about them as individuals. So I want to make sure that I break those two things apart. But in Newspeak, there's so many people that won't even talk about this right now because you've got the thought police with this whole LGBTQ religion over here that may come after you. But I think that we need to have some courage to be able to pull those two things apart and say, I love you, I care about you as an individual, but this is not okay to be using government money to push forward this particular religion. Your comment.
Well, I would agree with that. And, to clarify, I have zero problem with anybody's choices or how they live their life or whatever. It's when you expect the force of government to impose your values and your views and your thoughts on other people that I take exception. And this is, a classic case of government embracing a thought system or a religion and imposing it on others. And the reason for the Establishment Clause was because England had the Church of England as the official state religion. And we didn't want to have an official state religion here in America. And we should all live together harmoniously. And, that there could have been another cemetery where, most of the people who were buried there were Jewish, and it could have had a Star of David, and it should be allowed to stand because that's the symbol of mm-hmm. their religion. Or, if it had been a group of Muslim people who were killed, and they should have the symbol of their religion in that cemetery. It doesn't, government should be neutral when it comes to these kinds of things. And I think that Justice Alito is exactly right in his ruling on that.
Okay. Let's go to break. Let's continue. Maybe redefinition of words. Newspeak, you want to go with that?
Yeah.
Stay with that. Okay. This is Kim Munson with the AmeriChicks. I have Rick Turnquist in studio. We are talking about George Orwell's 1984. Be sure and check out my website and Facebook. We just got this posted, this very, very important publication that you've done regarding Colorado Democrats 1984 in Newspeak. So we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect your private property rights. Karen Levine believes in home ownership. Since losing her mother to breast cancer, Karen Levine has helped to organize a local fundraising event called Karen's for the Cure, raising money for breast cancer research. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by the AmeriChicks with Kim Munson, so call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Come join the 88 Drive-In for all your favorite blockbuster movies. We're open 7 days a week. Admission is only $9 per person and children under 12 are free. Friday, June 14th through Thursday, June 20th, features will include Aladdin, Dark Phoenix, and John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum. And remember our popular Monday through Thursday pizza special. Get one 12-inch pizza served fresh and hot from our oven and two tall, cool 16-ounce sodas, all for only $12. Plus, now you can top it all off with our new sweet, crunchy churros and a steaming cup of hot chocolate. For more information, go to our Facebook page or visit our website at 88drivein.net.
You get more out of life when you go out to a movie.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do. Well, welcome back to the AmeriChicks, where we dissect issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left, agree or disagree. Let's have a conversation. Happy summer today and all those great summer songs. Thrilled to have in studio with me, Rick Turnquest. We're talking about this very important piece that is up on my website as well as on Facebook. Be sure and take a look at it, like it, comment on it. It's Colorado Democrats, 1984 in Newspeak. And somebody said, can you give an example of doublethink?
Right. So okay. Doublethink is one of the key concepts in the book. And what doublethink is it's when a person accepts two mutually contradictory beliefs as correct. And it's kind of related to the concept of cognitive dissonance, except that in the case of cognitive dissonance, the person is experiencing discomfort due to the contradictory ideas, beliefs, or values they hold. With doublethink, there's no awareness of conflict or contradiction. And a great example of doublethink is the way that the party in the novel named the various ministries that it had as the organs of the government in the Oceania. The Ministry of Plenty controlled the economy, and the result under a socialist system, as we see in real-life modern-day Venezuela, is starvation and permanent economic hardship. The Ministry of Peace was concerned with waging permanent war. The Ministry of Truth was the propaganda arm of the party, similar to the mainstream media in modern-day America, and it was also responsible for changing historical records, which conform to party orthodoxy. And finally, the Ministry of Love was the regime's secret police who spied on the subjects of Oceania. I won't call them citizens because they weren't citizens in the sense that we're citizens mm-hmm. in America. Arrested people for thought crimes, imprisoned, tortured, brainwashed, and murdered them.
Oh, okay, can I jump in here?
Sure.
Because this whole doublethink thing, I'm just thinking right now, because you're saying doublethink is people have contrary issues here, but they don't even see that there's some. Okay, I have three words that I'm going to mention to you right now that I think is happening right here. Tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
People that preach tolerance, but yet you see they're the ones that are not tolerant.
That's right.
And I don't think they realize it.
That okay. No, they don't.
Or inclusion. We are seeing that all there's a, you know, a big money being spent by corporations to, you know, light up their buildings in the rainbow colors and talk about inclusion. And I think that's what they think. However, again, I go to the Jack Phillips thing is they're not including his ideas. That's not okay. And so I think they're inclusive. And then diversity. I mean, those are three words that are coming up to me.
Yeah, exactly. And there's more examples. You know, Antifa, the group that goes out and riots and protests conservative speakers like Ben Shapiro on college campuses.
Yeah.
Right. They're terrorists. And, you know, they're Antifa is short for anti-fascist, when in fact they're real fascists because of their tactics and their goals, which is silencing the free speech of the opposition.
Uh-huh.
There's some more examples you can throw out there. Gun safety, for example, replaces gun control. And we have free college because, you know, that sounds way better, but it's not free. Nothing's free.
Yeah.
You know, and just think about what's the value of something you get for free?
And just a quick note is if somebody decides not to go to college, let's say that they decide to go to trade school, they get into the workforce immediately and start paying taxes. How is it fair that they have to pay for somebody else's free college?
Well, it's not fair, of course. And, you know, and in fact, the whole concept of fairness, you know, the left loves to talk about fairness, but they're, you know, they, fairness is what people on the libertarian side believe, you know, is equality of opportunity. Everybody's equal under the law. There's no special cases. There's no special groups. Everybody is subject to the same law. And in their world, you know, you carve out this group for this special treatment and that group for that special treatment. That's why identity politics is so important to the left.
And we just talked about this week. If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, in essence, they're not equal rights then, you know, and instead, you know, how about if we, as you mentioned, equality of opportunity, and that people are hired and fired on the content of their character, excellence, those kinds of things, instead of that descriptor. So there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
That's right.
Go ahead. More.
So, you know, you talked about freedom of speech. That term only applies to speech that leftists approve of. Opposing viewpoints are silenced. And how do they silence opposition? They do it by bullying the opposition, by smearing, ignoring, insulting, deflection. There are entire groups of people devoted to silencing the opposition. And you see this on Twitter. When you know, if you put something out there that people don't like, then you get hammered mercilessly by the opposition until you're, you know, basically bullied off the platform.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I see it every day in the CoPolitics hashtag where, you know, somebody will say something and they get hammered mercilessly by the opposition. There's leftist sock puppets out there who spend all day long just hammering Cory Gardner because they hate him. I can't decide if they hate Cory Gardner worse than Donald Trump, but it's a pretty close tie.
But you know what? I think that is really a strategy because, you know, they want to unseat Cory Gardner. So they're out there early. You know, that's what they're doing, is trying to discredit that. And that's the same thing that they're doing with Donald Trump. That's why it's important to not be just on one platform, to try to search out truth.
That's right. And you know, I'll just make another comment about Cory Gardner. I know a lot of my Republican friends have problems, you know, with things that are, you know, votes that Cory Gardner's done over the years. And I don't agree with Cory Gardner on everything. And the fact of the matter is, I don't agree with my best friends on everything.
Sometimes, but I don't agree with myself.
That's right. And, you know, but the fact of the matter is, you know, Cory Gardner's doing a good job as our senator. I believe he deserves to be reelected. And I'll tell you one thing, he's going to be better than anybody who's competing to replace him with a D next to their name.
Well, and you know what? I think it's going to be Hickenlooper. And, you know, Hickenlooper is out there touting this great economy that we have here in Colorado. And I would submit to you that one of the reasons that we have had a good economy is because we have had Tabor, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. And he, before he left office, took a good swipe at that. And so now he's out there trying to portray himself as this brilliant, you know, pro-business economist, when in essence, if you look at his policies, they are socialist, and there's nothing social about socialism.
That's right. And the fact of the matter is, I agree with you that Tabor is one factor in the success of our economy over the last 30 years since mm-hmm. it was voted on. And the fact of the matter is that we've seen several initiatives come over the pike, you know, in the form of proposed amendments over the years to raise our taxes. Mm-hmm. And Coloradans consistently vote these amendments down by significant numbers. I think the last one was Amendment 66. It was a $1 billion tax increase to fund the schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it was roundly defeated. And in the last election, you know, there was tax increases.
That big income tax increase.
They were voted down handily. So Coloradans have shown consistently by their votes over the last, several elections that they are not in favor of higher taxes. But that doesn't stop the Colorado Democrats from trying to make you pay higher taxes.
And I want to also say the Republicans. And there's some Republicans as well.
So this is true.
We need to hold them accountable.
And that's quite true. You know, I'm really sorry that Principles of Liberty went on hiatus this year because they did a great job of analyzing bills and outlining why they supported or opposed them.
It's so much work.
And then they graded all the legislators. And I wrote a blog post about this a few years ago, you know, called Time for a Change at the State Capitol, after I looked at the scorecards that they put together for the legislature as it existed then. And, you know, every Democrat got an F on the principles of liberty, and many Republicans did too. So it was, you know, we need to elect people who are more liberty-minded and who are more freedom-minded. But more than that, we need to make the case on why we should elect those people. And that's where we need to really spend our efforts, I think, is on making the case for freedom and limited government and electing candidates who will advance those causes.
Well, and as surveys show, that people still really prefer freedom in versus force. So, hey, Rick, this has gone quickly. We're going to have you back.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Final thought. What would you like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I'd like to just ask the listeners to read the book, 1984. It's a short read. It's entertaining. Read my blog post on Kim's website and check out my blog, To Advance Freedom, where I talk about how words mean things. I talk about Second Amendment issues and overall freedom issues. And thank you, Kim, for having me on today.
Well, and I totally agree. And I thought that what you mentioned regarding the doublespeak on that is that they use gun safety when, in essence, the ultimate goal is gun control. And there is a reason why the right to bear arms is in the Constitution as well, because our founders really, I think they understood the problems that could face us in a society of 1984.
And people ask, you know, how could the Germans let Hitler take power and do all these horrible things? And the fact of the matter is, starting with the Weimar Republic, which was the government in place before the Nazis came to power, gun control was a very much a part of life in Germany after World War One. And, you know, it's an armed citizenry that prevents things like Nazi Germany or socialist Russia or communist Russia from happening.
That's for sure. So we need to fight. And Peter Muhlenberg, he was a Lutheran pastor in Woodstock, Virginia, 1776. He said, "There's a time for all things, a time to preach and a time to pray. Those times have passed away. There's a time to fight, and that time has now come." And that is where we are right now. We need to fight. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.